For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Marvel Vision, a podcast about Marvel, the MCU, and right now, Daredevil Born Again. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we're going to be talking about episode 6 of season 1, to be clear.
Excessive Force.
Excessive yes. Force.
I know we just said our names, but really, aren't we all Adam in some ways, you know? Just
trapped in a dungeon of our own making.
Exactly. Well, all we have are as an axe.
Talking about like Adam and Eve or something there.
In a way, that is Pete.
Yeah, Pete. You are Adam of Adam and Eve in the way that you just can't stop eating ribs, right?
That's right. Yeah. I love. And Pete always names animals. He makes up names for animals. Just no one's really using them. Yeah. Like you call hummingbirds like Flappy. Those Flappy ones. Is that what you said?
Yeah. Sure. Dogs are fuzz buckets, I believe, is what you told us the other day. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's going to catch on. Keep trying, Pete. Keep eating those ribs. Keep naming those animals. You're going to get it one of these days. And you're going to get this episode one of these
days. One of these days. One of these days you're going to get this episode, listeners.
Yep. Spoilers past this point. Very brief recap because there's a lot of stuff going on in this episode. But this is the big one, or one of the big ones, with Muse finally revealed here. We've gotten teases of this villain in the past couple of episodes. But now, thanks to an investigation from Angela Del Toro, the niece of Hector Ayala, the White Tiger, Matt Murdock jumps back into the Daredevil suit and goes after him, ending in a big fight scene where he saves her life. Double fight scenes, yes. Meanwhile, on the Wilson Fisk side of things, he is wrestling with also the Muse mystery, which leads to a amping up of a bunch of things, specifically the Vigilante Task Force. We get to see Powell. That's trouble. You meet Cole North, a character straight out of the comics, though entirely different here. And Kingpin, as mentioned at the beginning, has Adam, the guy who had an affair with Vanessa, locked in a basement, brings him an axe, and then they have a big fight at the same time. So we're getting parallel paths very clearly. Like Daredevil is rescuing somebody and bringing them back to life as Kingpin is slowly killing a guy. So that's the overall thing. Plus,
think they're trying to connect these two characters?
It seems like
Thick Wilson and Matt Murdock.
I don't think so. You know, we know that they reshot the show, right? So the first version of the show is probably all Kingpin. They're like, we got to use this footage somehow on this Daredevil show.
Oh, that's smart. Do you think maybe they shot it in order and they were like, okay, now we'll show Daredevil. And then they were like, okay, let's go back over to, and they just moved the camera around. So they had to use it this way.
That's crazy.
Unedited.
But it was interesting how like it seemed when Kingpin was in a meeting, getting kind of stressed out, his hearing was kind of like acting up. It was kind of like the opposite of Daredevil. And I thought the
bad hearing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's some interesting parallels there where they're kind of the opposite of each other, even though they're going through a lot of similar stuff.
Yes, I like that Pete is treating your joke seriously, but treat your joke seriously, Justin. Is this something like, is this bothering you, or do you like this pattern?
No, I mean, I like it. It's funny. It's just so, because to speak sort of in a larger sense, I really like that they have expanded the show to not just be a Daredevil story. It really is a pairing, a twinning of Matt and Thick Wilson together in a way that makes it is adding depth in a way that I was like dubious of, but it actually is working because they're doing a good job of showing how similar they are, even though they are hero and villain. Like they're both giving into their sort of addiction, sort of the only way they find peace and can blow off steam. Well, at the same time, Daredevil is being a hero, like going out of his way to do this because it's the right thing to do. And and Fisk is just like killing a dude slowly over time just because he had sex with his wife when they were on a break.
Oh man. His like screaming out mine was so intense, you know.
The last thing I will say, the only part where I'm like, okay, we get it, is like Daredevil in the middle of so many fights is just leaning back and screaming. Yeah. I'm like, okay.
Like, no, I think he's using his echolocation, right? Like he's trying to see the place.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why he screams so much. I do really like it. I 100% agree with you, Justin, in terms of it adding depth. I love the parallels. I love cutting back and forth. And I also love the way that Matt becomes Daredevil again. Like we've talked every single episode about, okay, when is he going to put on the suit? In both directions, like, of course we want him to be Daredevil and of course we want him to be suited up. But at the same time, at least I'll speak for myself, I've really been enjoying the fact that he's out of it. And like, especially there is this tension of when it's going to happen. So building up the tension, the way they put together that scene of him making the 911 call.
Yeah. And then be like, fuck it.
I know. I liked it. It was so casual. He's like, fuck this.
It was great. And the smash cut to then like he's Daredevil again, I thought was such a nice way of undercutting all the angst and the wrestling and like, oh, should I do this? Should I do this? We've already done it. We've had 5+ episodes plus 3 seasons of that so far. Get him on the costume. Let's go. Love that moment. Loved going with that. And I also love, just to tie it back to the Thick Wilson thing, I love that they paralleled that with Kingpin, that same sort of thing. Like he's simmering and frustrated over the course of every single episode here with his job as mayor and being like, he doesn't say fuck it, but him being like, fuck it, I'm just going to torture this dude. That's what I do is great.
Well, a couple of things there, but I do think that like it's driving me a little crazy that we were getting both fights at the same time, because I would have liked to have kind of spent a little bit more time on, you know, get to enjoy the fight separately a little bit, because like doubling it up is, it's so much more intense that way. Because it's like, you're like, oh, yeah, go Matt. And then you're like, oh, stop, Kingpin. What are you doing, dude? Oh, go Matt. You know, the ping-ponging back and forth, although artistically cool. And I understand the kind of build towards this thing. And they're both kind of breaking, if you will. I would like to be able to kind of enjoy it a little bit separately, because it is two separate things. Because Thick Wilson is not like, like he's been doing this horrible thing to this guy the whole time, and this isn't his breaking point. He broke at work where he started laughing because things got so fucking stressful. But I do think that there's a difference between someone who's just torturing somebody and then like, instead of you know, getting tired of the torturing, he's got to amp it up by saying, all right, well, I'm tired of just beating you to death all the time. Here's an axe to make things differently, versus Matt, who kind of broke. It was polite of him to say, fuck it, into the phone, because that way the 911 was like, oh, they're going to handle it themselves. It's fine. They got it. They said, fuck it. So we're good. No need to send anybody. But
they're very much not two separate things, though. They're the exact same thing in the exact same way.
Down to the fact
that they're both fighting artists. Muse is an artist. Adam is an artist. Like, there's a very clear parallel there, like, literally on the surface between the action and also emotionally what these characters are going through. So I hear you, Pete, but I think it would be a very much more typical show. They're like, here's Matt's fight scene. Now we're going to have Kingpin's fight scene versus cross-cutting them, which... I think professed you are feeling the tension of that. You don't know which way to go. And I think that's exactly it, right? Like, we're rooting for Daredevil, except should we be, because he's beating the shit by underground in a subway station, versus what Kingpin is doing, which we don't want him to do that, but we also do want him to do that.
Yeah,
we want Kingpin to be Kingpin. We want him to be the villain so we can boo and hiss him. We don't want... You want the rest of the season for Kingpin to be like, I'm proud of you for being a really good mayor of New York.
No, I want Kingpin to be like, either, you know, stop torturing this guy and start talking to his wife, or, you know what I mean?
You want him to do the right thing. That's not going to happen. That is not the point of the show.
It could.
But you really want that? You want him to be like, Adam, thanks for your time here. Go be with my wife.
I don't want that, but I would like him to at least kind of like not have to do the torture thing to exist and find a way to kind of like, you
know, all about sublimating your urges. That's exactly what's going on here, from Daredevil to Muse to Adam to Wilson.
Yeah, but I don't want to root for someone to be a horrible person just so they can.
You don't have to root for them. I mean, and it's all building toward their next high, or the ultimate high for both these guys is fighting each other. And, you know, besides the cross-cutting being like a twinning to show them like doing the same thing at the same time, it's also showing them almost fighting each other. Like the way it was cut, you could have it be they're fighting their own battles, but it is eventually it's all about each other and the final confrontation that we're going to get between them.
Let's hope so.
Yes, yeah. Or maybe not. Or maybe Wilson will be, they'll get close to the final confrontation and then they'll do a, it's not your fault.
Yeah, exactly.
Classic. Or maybe Daredevil will finally take down Adam. Just wreck that dude.
Son of a bitch.
I don't like your beard.
Uppercut. My Catholic background says you shouldn't have done the cheating thing.
I will say, I feel like Daredevil has a little too much of a beard while we're talking about beards for his costume.
I agree with you. I thought that same thing. It's too. Also, it's like, yo, Angela's like, I just met you. You have the same beard.
Yeah. And that part I could get past just because of superhero media, superhero literature, etc. But I hear what you're saying. I just to jump back into it, because there's a lot of other things about the episode to start off at the beginning. We got the swordsman video.
Come on, swordsman. Yeah.
What? Why?
Or swordsman.
Go ahead, Justin.
I love Tony Dalton.
Yeah. He's great.
He's so good. He's wildly underused here. I don't know what the deal is. And it's a connection to a show that we haven't, or I guess I haven't thought about in a long time. And I don't know what the point of that is.
Just a review for anybody who doesn't remember, because Hawkeye was in 2021, so that was a couple of years ago. Tony Dalton is Jack Duquesne, who was never the swordsman on that show. He just liked swords and was good at swords.
He was always
They initially thought he was the bad guy behind everything. That was actually Kingpin. He was engaged to Kate Bishop's mom. And then in the last episode, he stood up and helped take down some of the bad guys. We got like a little tease that maybe he was going to do some sword stuff, but that was pretty much where we left him 4 years ago, real time. And as we talked about, this is now mid-2027 in this episode. So it's been
glad to be reminded of that.
The report is on it and got to see the footage of the swordsman being the swordsman. So very exciting.
Yeah, but I agree with you on Dalton being underutilized. He was also underutilized in a weird way on Hawkeye, and they got to figure out. He's such a perfect actor for the show, and it's weird to bring him back and not give him the same sort of showcase as John Bernthal got for The Punisher. Like, this feels like a show that should be able to use Tony Dalton's powers perfectly, and at least of this episode, we're not getting that.
Well, but, like, what could that possibly be? Like, what do we have this anti-vigilante task force. Swordsman could be a vigilante, technically, but what do we... Is that a next season thing?
It's next couple episodes. If the task force starts rounding up vigilantes, Swordsman could go down. Or maybe he teams up with Daredevil, fights off the task force a little bit, you know?
So I think in the text of the show, like literally surface level, the Swordsman video is there to give us a tipping point for the vigilante task force. Like, I'll get into, I think, why that doesn't exactly work in a second. But I think that's the idea here, is like, we've got all these vigilantes. Now there's another one. Time to boot up the anti-vigilante task force and take them down. The problem is, there's not enough vigilantes on this show or in New York in general. Like, they mentioned...
How dare you? Look at all those Elmos and stuff out in, like, Times Square and stuff.
Those are vigilantes.
What are you saying they're vigilantes?
They're taking, you know, people's money and being really mean to
criminals.
That's not vigilante. That's the opposite of vigilante.
They're rescuing people's children
from their families.
Stick up for those. You know, I mean, they're really abusing.
One time I went into the Times Square subway and I saw two Elmos changing at the bottom of the stairs. Very upsetting moment.
Yeah, wow. That's the thing we need to stop. Where are you, Eric Adams? So I've noticed some reports of Elmos being brutally beaten it coincides when last time you came to New York. Hey, is there?
Mark your calendars.
Wow.
Mark your calendars.
I'm coming back.
Classic vigilante move. Hey, guys, could be in town for a couple of days.
Mark your calendars, criminals. We're coming for you. So you're sort of an Elmo Punisher.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. You're nice. One.
You're one bad day from being me.
Oh my god!
Anyway, right. What I was saying though, just to list the vigilantes that we have right now. So we have Daredevil, obviously. We have the Punisher.
White
they
Tiger.
Mentioned Spider Hero dressed as a spider. Obviously, Spider Man, but he's not going to be on the show at any point. Like, they're not going to bring in Spider Man.
You don't know
and
that.
Then. Potentially, we have the other Defenders, but they're probably not going to show up.
We're not getting
that right. Would be awesome. So, Luke Cage.
In terms of the show, I think there is something to the idea of Mayor Wilson Fisk using the excuse of essentially three vigilantes to be like, "I'm creating my own private portion of the police force that I can control, and we're going to crack down on crime because." Literally, a guy in charge is using the smallest infinitesimal population for the excuse for a lot of things in our real world right now. Mm-hmm. But they're not necessarily playing that in the show. They're more playing the text of lots of vigilantes, time for the anti-vigilante task force.
Well, and it does feel a little bit out of order, where it's like the White Tiger is just murdered. So, like, the anti-vigilante vibe is already happening. So, like, it's, like, strange time to be, like, we need a task force when the vigilante was just killed. There is no Daredevil until this episode. So, to your point, Alex, it's, like, there's no real threat here. Unless he's saying Muse is a vigilante, which he sort of is here.
Maybe he is.
But that is confusing a little bit. Unless they're trying to say, like, this was created for a bureaucratic reason that made sense at the time to get Muse, when what's going to happen is he's going to pivot it to going after Daredevil.
I think he just wants an excuse to create this anti-vigilante task force. And like he says, you know, he's already railed on, I'm forgetting the name of the police commissioner, but the one that he blackmailed a couple of episodes back.
Yeah.
The police commissioner was asking for better pay, days off, etc., and he's giving that all to the anti-vigilante task force. It's a task force of bad apples that will be given overtime and no body cameras. And so he's using it as, like, his own thing. Like, he can do whatever he wants. And we know, because we know Kingpin, what he wants is to take down Daredevil. What he wants is to take down the Punisher, etc., or what, Pete?
Or he just likes to give really great speeches or rile up horrible people. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, but even those cops, I was like, he was like, here's what we're going to do. And he laid it out. And they were all like, I don't know, man. This feels bad, like a bad idea. Like, there was not, I expected to be a resounding, like, yeah, let's we're Punishers. But instead, they were like, this is going to be weird.
Seems like you're using your powers for bad, sir. Perhaps not. Perhaps go back to your basement with your artist you're torturing.
And that is sort of cool. Like, the idea that even the task force is like, this is fucked up. I don't know. We used to be cops a minute ago, and now we're on this. And that's cool. But, like, I hope they take advantage of that. It was just such a funny scene where the bad guy's rallying them, and all the other bad guys are like, not interested, really.
Well, I do think this is a pure theory at this point, but we get a character, Cole North, who is out of Chip Zdarsky's run on the comics. In that book, he was, if I recall, and I didn't look this up beforehand, and I should have, but he was a police detective who was anti-vigilante and going after Daredevil, but he was very much on the side of the law. I don't think he was corrupt or anything like that.
Because he becomes sort of Daredevil's man in the chair.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like maybe he is a mole there, to to provide information to Daredevil or take down the task force or something like that. But I guess we'll see.
Yeah, and when we hear about, they go take pains to show that he's not a monster in this. So, like, I do think that will become – it's just weird because now it's like we have Cole and then Cherry's just his whiskey butler for Daredevil.
That
so
was
like,
a fun scene, though. Come on,
man. Can we talk about the scene with Cherry where he's like, God, I really don't want to tell you about Muse.
Why? But you're going to find out anyway.
Why? How would he find out anyway? Why would he have found out? Why does Cherry need to tell him? That was the part where I was like, you can see the gears turning where we inserted something to go from point A in the previous shot to point B.
Well, I think getting news from a friend with a drink is the best way to get your news. So I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's the way I am with Twitter. As I have people just constantly handing me drinks every time there's a news hit on online.
They're like, I hate you. I'm going to find out anyway. You know, here you go.
Well, and I did think it was funny in the scene right before that where it's Fisk meeting with all of his advisors, and they're so casually saying, like, 60 plus deaths. It's pretty crazy. I was like, what? This would be a five alarm crisis and in even a tenth of that in any city. So it's just a funny. They're like, yeah, it's human blood. They use an epoxy. Darndest thing to get off the walls.
Oh, man. I don't know. I kind of like that. I thought the offhand sanitation worker was pretty funny.
I agree.
That was
hilarious.
Like that. And he keeps going off, and then, like, Fisk is losing his mind. Yeah, that was a fun, tense scene for sure.
I mean, a lot of great smaller characters in this episode. Johnny Santini, all the ones. But I got to shout out my Tony Dalton. I got to shout out one of my favorite actresses right now from the place, the head nurse in the TV show The Pitt. Catherine LaNasa shows up here in the, like, rich party scene. It's, again, criminally underused performer.
The evil blonde lady? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. She's so good in The Pitt.
Well, so that plot line also, I was very excited to see that because that is something, again, from Chip Zdarsky's run where Wilson Fisk is mayor, but just like he is here, he's not actually in control of the city. He's working for the government. And for the first time, he is out of his depth with these one percenters who control so much more than him. So there's actually two of them, if I recall, a married couple. And I wonder if she's half of that and whether we're going to get more of that plot.
It feels, I mean, not to do this, is just reading the actor tea leaves. She is a big enough actor that I got to think that we are going to see more of that. Mm-hmm. And if Daredevil's frustration is choosing to become Daredevil again, his powerlessness that he's punching Adam in exchange for is this thing you just defined, Alex. So I feel like we need to aggravate that. Mm-hmm. So more 1%ers being a bother.
She's going to go in the dungeon and get her axe dry.
Oh, yeah, it's like, step right up. Who wants to kill this artist almost?
I mean, and it kind of makes sense. There's a lot of fun bars you can go to for axe throwing in Red Hook. So I imagine that's where they came up with the idea.
Yeah,
definitely. Smart. Well, Dick Wilson spends a lot of time in Red Hook.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
How do we feel about Muse? I'm a little conflicted about this. One very specific thing that I am a little conflicted about with Muse is
the mask.
No, I actually think the costume's pretty good.
Agreed.
The murals that he's drawing, they feel like a viral campaign somebody would do in the city for Daredevil Born Again, not what Muse, a serial killer, should be doing.
You're upset at Muse's artistry that is using, his paintings?
I don't know.
These lines are too clean.
I'm the most fucked up serial killer you've ever seen in my life. Check out my painting of Kingpin kissing a pig's butt.
What? Yeah, I mean,
he's a serial killer. He's not really that great of an artist. Were you going to be like, oh, in the comics, his artistry was so much better?
Well,
like,
no. But here's the thing. In the comics, he is a pretentious artist. It's up to you whether his art is good or not. But it's very much like, I create art. And, you know, he's first introduced creating a mural with 100 people's blood. But it's very like nouveau modern art style. Later, he creates a sculpture where, if I recall, it's like 6 Inhumans that he killed. And he then poses their bodies in different ways. So whether he's a good artist or not doesn't matter, but he's definitely doing things that are like, you see my art, I'm really pushing the envelope. And that's the whole idea behind him. He's a pretentious asshole. Here, he's doing things that, again, are just like very nicely painted. Like, they look good. They're like little editorial cartoons.
I agree with you. I feel like it's a weird choice, and maybe it was meant to be like, look, this is cool. This is additive to the city. The white tiger thing is like pro-vigilante. Feels nice. Maybe that was the idea, because I agree. It should at least be Banksy-esque, where it's a little more raw or something. Because we hit the hard pivot from this like very like managed brand, white tiger, kingpin, city stuff, to two women with their eyes pulled out next to like a building. I was like, yo, pivot, artistic pivot.
Yes. I feel like maybe they cut it out, but they did this really dark sequence where he made like a family circle a strip, and that but, was, but it's made of blood. You know what I mean? So it's creepy. Nice.
Yeah, Jeffy's sure. trail is blood around the town as he jumps over fence posts and shit.
Yeah. And it just also raises questions. I mean, this doesn't actually matter at all, but I spent too much time in the episode being like, how did he get the white in the paint?
Yes,
like, how 100%. Did he do any of this? I don't know.
It's all proxy.
Well, is he using milk, breast milk, human breast milk? Give me some blending, give me some body blends here.
Yeah, we need to understand his process, and hopefully now that he's escaped, we'll get that next episode where he's like,
he's on the BB report, and he's like, listen, what we want to do is mix human blood with regular food coloring, and then...
I need the Bob Ross show where he's talking about the happy trees.
I also don't love the fact that he doesn't talk. Like, that's one of the things that I really liked about the character. I never thought in a million years that they'd give him the powers that he does in the comics. That's fine. That's not part of the show Daredevil Born Again, which other than... the mention of a magic amulet doesn't actually have any magic in the show, really, even though it exists in the MCU. But I'm missing that, like you said, Banksy, that pretentious artist, that guy who is pontificating while Daredevil fights him.
Well, don't you think we're going to get a Muse origin episode?
Yeah, I feel like because he got away, we're going to get him like powering up a little bit and coming back for the next round even crazier than before.
And I don't mind that he's silent. I think it's cool. I thought the scene was, maybe I liked it better than you, Alex, but I thought the scene was suitably horrifying of him like stabbing and getting the blood out of Angela.
Oh my God. I was like, the fact that it cut to Matt just at home, like Googling things in the subway, really, I was like, come on, dude, like, what the fuck? You know, Angela's really.
What did you think
troubling.
About the fact that his base is under 66th Street, Columbus Circle, which is another, like, for people who don't live in New York, like, one of the more fucked up places in New York?
Like, literally underneath the right Met Opera House.
Get out at Lincoln Center, the AMC, the great IMAX screen there. Is right there.
Here's the thing. If you're going to be an artist, you want to be close to the ballet, you know, the opera. You're right there in the mix. Mm-hmm. I think it makes total sense.
Oh, my God.
And you can, like, you take a break and Central Park is right there. Walk up to the Museum of Natural History. Beautiful area.
The Time Warner Center. Get, a $30 cocktail at the bar up top. Really lovely.
What else in the episode we talk about?
We should ask Pete. We did have a lot of foggy sightings here. How do you feel? Is that turning you into a Muse-type character?
It is rough. And it's also like we're getting – what's nice is we finally realize that she is the worst girlfriend ever for Matt because she is a horrible therapist. But I think that
– Hold on.
What are you talking about?
What are you talking about?
I'm getting there. So we get this – he's praying. It's this kind of beautiful moment. He's flashbacking to Foggy, which is heartbreaking to see. And I'm like, too soon. I'm not ready to kind of revisit this. But okay. It's nice that Daredevil's thinking about him for once. So then she goes, what are you praying? Still? I was like, whoa, a therapist aren't supposed to be fucking judgy here. What the fuck are you doing? And then she manipulates him. Is like, hey, you know, I could really use an interview with the Punisher, maybe Daredevil, you know him. And then she goes, don't be weird about it. Very manipulating for a fucking therapist / girlfriend.
She's not his therapist, though.
I'm saying, you know, you take a creed like you're supposed to be. A therapist is supposed to be, I won't judge you, this kind of thing. You would think if you're going to be somebody's girlfriend, you might also bring some of the things you've learned over this.
But she's not on the clock. She's not on the clock.
I guess not. Yeah, when you're off the clock, you're a horrible person who's manipulating somebody in a relationship. I think he needs to get the fuck out of there because she doesn't have good intentions.
Wow. Pete's much more concerned about Daredevil's girlfriend than any of the actual dangers plaguing him. He's trapped in there with his love. And who's throwing him an axe is what you're saying. But what I'm saying to you, Pete, is she's not always on the clock. It's like you don't walk around constantly podcasting.
You can't say that to somebody and then manipulate the shit out of them and be like, oh, don't be weird about all that stuff and
she's
pressure
not
that I gave you.
bullying him. He did.
She was like, I want your contacts. Set up an interview with Punisher. You've talked to Jared. I want that for my book. I'm on a deadline. Oh, don't be weird about all the things I just pressured you into doing.
She didn't pressure you. She was excited about it.
No, dude, that
was reasonable if you're in a relationship with somebody to ask them about other people they know.
Here's the thing.
Oh, really? Interesting. Hey, ladies, Pete's single. You'll never talk to anybody else ever again.
No, what the fuck?
That's
the rules you set up, Pete. No.
That's ridiculous.
I don't think Matt was mad at her about that. I think he was feeling the stress of the world coming for Daredevil. Like, he doesn't want a book about Daredevil or the Punisher out on the streets. And it's more his worrying about her rather than him being like, hey, get off my jock about my business, girl.
Well, and also he's not ready to tell her that he is Daredevil. So just the pure idea of, oh God, how am I going to get out of this situation where she is going to potentially get closer to figuring out my true identity. That's panicking for him. So it's not it's not about her. It's about the pressure on Matt and Pete.
And I think
it seemed
Pete's
like
saying,
she got some book pressure and then immediately applied that pressure to him.
It was her idea to do the book. And makes sense. Cool thing to talk about. She knows that
she's got this book coming. All of a sudden he shows up. Oh, I could manipulate this guy and use him for stuff for the book.
What do we think about, we got to see the tracksuit mafia show up this episode, tying into Hawkeye again.
Big Hawkeye. Hawkeye has had to be loving this episode.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's fun to see them. I wouldn't call it like a fun Easter egg. It was just like a thing that happened.
Yes.
Technically.
I assume they were several episodes back as well, but this is the first time I was like, oh, they are wearing tracksuits. They are the tracksuit mafia. I get it. I get what's going on.
Yeah, I didn't get enough bros, though. You know what I mean? That was the fun part.
They did need more bros. You're 100% correct. But I do like, I don't know, not to veer into a completely different conversational topic, but we've talked a lot about the arc of Marvel post-Endgame and the fact that there are things thrown out there and never really picked up. We don't really have like a fabric of the MCU. Little things like that, like we set up a gang that wears tracksuits in Hawkeye and now here they are again. It's not an Easter egg. It's not like thrilling for fans, but it's like, well, we have this gang. Why don't we use them? And I like that.
Well, I do too. I like to the point you guys are saying though, I just wish it was a little bit more character-y, a little more fun. Like it feels a happenstance or a sort of like, yeah, you guys can do it. And when it should be like, I want a little bit more intention there because that is a fun part of the Hawkeye story, especially in the comics, a little bit less so in the series. So, and it's getting less fun rather than more fun.
Yeah. Any other notes from the episode? Other things that you guys would like to call out?
The talk that Fisk and Vanessa had was nice. It was nice to see them kind of talking outside of therapy and stuff like that. So,
are we worried? Speaking of that, are we worried about Thick Wilson's suits? He seems to be busting.
He's getting so yoked from beating on Adam that he's busting out of suits. You know what I mean?
I don't think that's exactly what's happening. I think it's the opposite because he started off the season. They had a scene. They're like, wow, you're really kind of getting fit. You've lost a lot of weight. You're eating these egg white omelets.
Fit Wilson.
And then we see he has this basement with Adam where he's eating his rich, fattening meals. So I think it's more about like he is physically becoming the kingpin again versus pretending to himself, to other people, whatever it was, that he wasn't what he is. That's what's going on there with the.
And I think the idea there was like you can't hide your secrets. You can eat in your and beat up your the person you're mad at in your little thing, but like that you will literally wear that outside where you are keeping a secret. So I thought that was cool, very subtle way of doing that. And the other thing I wanted to highlight was I thought the back end of the episode, the fight into Wilson sitting there above the broken Adam beneath him, really well shot. And especially the use of the baton wire stuff that Daredevil's been doing. That's hard, I think. And they've been doing it really well, the way he shoots the knife out of Muse's hand before he can kill Angela. That stuff is so comic booky, and we haven't seen it in previous seasons, probably because of budget and difficulty, and I love that they're committing to it here.
Yeah. All right, before we wrap up here, we are back to one episode a week starting next week. So what is on your vision board for episode 7 of Daredevil Born Again? What do you want to see? Justin, why don't you go first?
Want to see, and I think will come, is a Muse origin episode. I think, you know, our speculation is we've seen the person behind the mask earlier. Now we've seen them in action here. I feel like we need to combine those two, see that path, and find out what the motivation behind it is. The starving artist stuff, I think, would help to flesh out the character and make him a real villain for this season.
Well, one thing that I want to see eventually is another kind of meeting here with Fisk and Daredevil. I also want to see what this task force is going to do and who it's going to take down. Is it going to go after the swordsman first? I doubt they're going to go after the Punisher. And since Matt is now back in the costume, then I feel like he's definitely going to be on the radar and have to be dealt with. So,
well, didn't we start off during the conversation in the diner at the beginning of the season where they were like, Matt to Wilson was like, if you go off the rails, I'm coming after you. And Wilson was like, if you become Daredevil again, I'm coming after you. So that's definitely on my vision board for the next episode. I think we're going to start to see that, particularly as we're entering the cycle of the last three episodes of the season.
Oh, we only got three left?
Yeah.
Oh, but it's interesting because
you think we'll get a chunk, or is it going to go one?
Chunk? No, it's one by one, I believe.
Is it?
Yeah, one episode a week.
I do think, you know, right now, Daredevil's taking down Muse, something that Mayor Fisk also wants to happen. So right now they're aligned. I'm curious to see how that will play out. And I do think the task force is something, to your point, Pete, I don't know if we'll get that coming to a head in this season. Maybe we'll get a big moment will happen, but that feels like something they could set up for this second season, which is going to be, I think, paired pretty closely with this season from a writing and story point of view because of the way they develop this.
Yeah. We'll see.
Behind the scenes there.
Yeah. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Daredevil, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, stay marvelous.
he told Angela he doesn't like therapy talk, so you tell me what's up.
And ladies, if you want to date Pete, just find him. He will always be podcasting. Always podcasting.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.